Good morning to you, church family. See that the children are walking to the back to enjoy their time. Thankful to Allison and any others that are helping out there. Also want to just preface my sermon with sincere thanks to all of you, whether it was for your prayers when we were sick, for providing meals, for asking about providing meals and groceries, for sending gifts, cards, and other things. Thank you all so much for the special blessing of what church family means in a time of need. I want to wish you a happy new year. Welcome, thank you. Welcome to 2023. Readers of a popular magazine passed on popular or the most important or significant or memorable advice that they had received over the past few years. And one person said that every day when they wake up, they get out of bed, wag your finger, and say, "It's showtime, baby." And try that out this week. You step out of bed, look in the mirror at yourself, and say, "Self, showtime, baby." Happy New Year again to you. You know, we often pass on different New Year's resolutions and words of wisdom, words of advice, and so I have pulled some from this same paper. One person said this in terms of advice, good advice that they had received. Boyfriends come and boyfriends go. SAT scores are forever. In your closet and your life, subtract whenever you add. You can't control other people's actions, but you can control your reaction to them. You don't always have to have the last word with your children, or your spouse, or your family. Another person said this: be where your feet are. So oftentimes we are present but not fully present, trying to do and think about multiple things at the same time instead of just being present. Be where your feet are. Another person said this: put 10 pennies in your pocket, in your left pocket. Find something for which you are grateful. Move one penny to your right pocket every time that happens. You should find all pennies have moved to the right pocket at the end of the day. Celebrate. A wife that had lost her husband said that she received this good advice at the funeral: sleep on his side of the bed. She said that was profoundly helpful and comforting. The effect was, quote, profoundly comforting, and it greatly lessened the ache of missing his physical presence. There are words of wisdom, proverbs, that have made it into our culture that we pass on and that can be used at different times and at different moments. Well, the Bible contains some similar things. There are certain books of the Bible, Proverbs, Job, Ecclesiastes, which contain what is called wisdom literature. Well, what is wisdom, biblically speaking? Biblical wisdom is doing the right thing at the right time. It is discerning what the state of the time is, kind of like a weatherman, weather lady. What their purpose is to tell you, look, this is what the weather is today, so you go ahead and do whatever the opposite of what they said. No, they get you ready for what the weather is so that you know what to wear, or it's going to be snowy conditions. And so you listen to the weather person, and you go outside, you dress accordingly. If it's snowing, you know what to do with your car and windows and so forth. And it's the same thing with biblical wisdom. Biblical wisdom is not just knowing what to do, it's practical. It's doing the right thing at the right time. Now, I've got to admit, I feel like I have my work cut out for me today. And the college students do as well. Ecclesiastes, I have felt, and many commentators have said the same thing about the book of Ecclesiastes, is that it is one of the most difficult books of the Bible to interpret. Someone said, in fact, I'm quoting, "No other book in the Bible has been such a difficult read," and that includes Revelation. There is more agreement about Revelation among commentators than there is about the book of Revelation, believe it or not. The big question in Ecclesiastes, by the way, comes from a Hebrew word that means to gather. It could be a gathering of students, or it could be an assembler, a person that collects wise sayings. Either one of those could be true. But that's perhaps why the person in the book is called the teacher or the preacher. The big question in Ecclesiastes, we're in chapter 3 again, by the way, is what makes life worth living? Isn't that an important question in our culture? What brings fulfillment? What is it that makes life worth living? And the author, there may be multiple authors, there may be a main author and then an editor of the book, but the person presented is Solomon, and there's no one wiser than Solomon. There's no one that had as much stuff as Solomon. And so the person in the name of Solomon, or perhaps Solomon himself, asked the question, what makes life worth living? And the person says, well, maybe it's pleasure, maybe it's having stuff. And so the person in Ecclesiastes says, well, I decided to test that out. And I tried to make myself cheerful with wine. I planted gardens for myself, all kind of beautiful trees and reservoirs. I accumulated female and male slaves so that I had people to do whatever I wanted to do. I had the most flocks and herds. I had the wisdom. I had the honor. No one had more silver and gold than I had. But the author concludes that pleasure, at least in those forms, is not what makes life worth living. Why? He starts to be delighted with all of the stuff that he accumulates. Look at all my stuff. And then he starts to think, you know what? I'm going to die. And someone else that may be wise or may be foolish or may not even be related to me is going to get all of the stuff that I have accumulated. And so that joy initially in pleasure gives way to despair. Because who's going to get this stuff? And then there's another question, right? How often has it happened in our experience that people have accumulated all kinds of stuff and then they lose it to misfortune? Or for whatever reason, they're not able to enjoy the stuff that they have accumulated. So the author of Ecclesiastes says that it's not stuff that makes life worth living. It's not accumulating. It's not having money. It's not entertainment. It's not gardens, it's not all of these things. Well, then he says, well, let me go ahead and test out wisdom. He comes to the conclusion and he says, you know what? Well, wisdom is better than folly. And then he starts to think, you know what? The great equalizer just puts a damper on things. He rejoices in wisdom and then he starts to think, you know what? Do the wise die? Do the fools die? The same fate overtakes the wise and the foolish. And who knows what happens? Who knows if the spirit of man goes upward, the author will say. Plus, there are limits to how much you can know. Some people have found out that the further and further they go in their education, the less they really know. The more knowledge, the author of Ecclesiastes says, the more grief sometimes. Well, if there are limits to wisdom, and it's not pleasure, then what about living right? And there's a connection between living right and godliness. But how many of you have seen bad things happen to good people? And the author says that I have seen something under the sun. Bad things happen to good people. And sometimes good things happen to bad people. Chapter 8 and verse 14. He says he's seen something else. He's seen people doing the right thing and they perish in their righteousness. And he's seen the wicked living long in their wickedness. And so his favorite word to describe his experience of life is the Hebrew word habel. Literally, it means breath, and some translations will translate it meaningless. Some translations will say futility. Some will say vanity. But literally, it means breath. That's what the word means, breath. It's a wind. It's a puff of steam. It's a mist. You ever tried to grab the wind in your hand? And so this was a word that was used for something that you tried to grasp, but you couldn't. You couldn't control it. Table. Something superficial or transitory. Life. What is life? But a mist that appears for a little while and then vanishes. It's Habel. What is it when the righteous perish in their righteousness and the wicked live long? I can't understand that. It's Habel. What is it when life seems so contradictory? And things just don't seem to be fair. When you see the poor being oppressed by people in power and not getting the justice that they deserve, there's a word for that. The author says, Habel. And that's why the book starts off and he says, meaningless, meaningless. Everything is meaningless. Dare we hope in such a world? I'll tell you something that's true. Every year, stuff is going to happen to you. Amen? Life is going to happen to you every year. Life has happened to you, it is happening to you, and it will happen to you. There are going to be some things that you don't expect to encounter that you will encounter every year. Some of that stuff is going to be good stuff, and it's going to be joy into your life. That's why the author says, let me read it one more time, there is a time for everything and a season for every activity under the heavens. There is a time to be born and a time to die. Might be worth reflecting on that. You go to the hospital, in the same hospital, there are people in some rooms that are excited for the birth of a baby. You go to another section of the hospital and there are some people that are grieving after having heard some terrible news. Or someone has died. Isn't it amazing that you could go into the same building and people can be rejoicing over a birth and mourning over a loss? Pope Benedict passed away this week at 95. Dax Tehera, ABC executive producer, passed away from a heart attack at 37. It's worth reflecting that there is a time to be born and a time to die. And that time may vary for different people, and we don't know how much time we are going to have. There's a time to be born and a time to die. There's a time to plant and a time to uproot. There's a time to kill, maybe signifying war, or from the standpoint of the Old Testament, just killings for heinous offenses. The author is not commenting on the morality of certain acts. He's just describing things that happen in life. And this is still true. People are still being born. People are still dying. People are still being killed. There is a time to kill, and there is a time to heal. And as you hear these things, I want you to think about the different seasons of your life, past, present, and future. There's a time to kill and a time to heal. A time to tear down and a time to build. Sometimes it happens with buildings. Is it not? Sometimes a building is torn down and then rebuilt. Bradley Center, torn down. Pfizer Forum, built up. A time to weep. And isn't it difficult when we experience seasons of weeping? Many of you here, we don't have to travel far. We can go into some of your houses behind closed doors and hear spouses weeping. People weeping over their losses, the loss of their sister, the loss of their mother, the sickness of their mother, taking care of their mother and their sister, cracked elbows, things ripped away. Time to weep, but there's also a time to laugh. A time to mourn, and a time to dance. There's a time to scatter stones, and a time to gather them. Now, this may be a reference to either clearing a field to cultivate it. You gather up the stones, you remove all the stones so you can plant it. And sometimes in times of war, people would throw stones onto an enemy field to destroy it. It's time to scatter stones and a time to gather them. There's a time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing. There's a time to search and a time to give up. Can you recall something that you really, really wanted to find? And you just couldn't find it, and so you had to give up? How about on the other side? Something that you had, but you realized that for whatever reason, it's just time to throw this away. Maybe it's contributing to some hurt in your life. Every time you look at this picture, every time you look at this thing, but there's a time to keep, and there's a time to throw away. There's a time to tear, and a time to mend. This may be a reference to when people would go through times of mourning, they would rip their garments. And then, after the time of mourning was over, they would sew them together again. There's a time to tear and a time to mend. And oh, my wife would probably say, this is true of me. Pat, there's a time to be silent. And a time to speak. Isn't that true sometimes? Isn't that especially true during moments where you know people that are going through grief? There's sometimes where it's just not time to speak. Maybe it's time for a hug. Maybe it's time to listen. Maybe it's just time to sit quietly by an individual and just be present. Maybe it's time the individual doesn't really want to talk right now. And they're going through a process of grief. But there's a time to be silent and a time to speak. And the wise person will know when the right time is to do each. When it's time to plant and when it's time to uproot. When it's time to mourn and when it's time to dance. When it's time to embrace and when it's time to refrain. A time to love and a time to hate. A time for war and a time for peace. And so I just say once again that life happens. Life happened, life is happening, and life will happen. And every year, stuff is going to happen to all of us. Some of it is going to be good and is going to make us dance. Some of it is going to bring us to our knees and cripple us. There's going to be things that happen to us, good and bad, that we don't expect. Amen. And that's going to be true in 2023. It's going to be true in 2024. It's going to be true until the day, the time comes for us to die. And the interesting or potentially frightening thing about that is that as much as people may not realize it, we have ultimate control of virtually nothing that happens to us. Can't that be scary when you think about it? That ultimately, now we might have some level of control. I can be healthy, I can work out every day, but that doesn't mean I won't pass away at 37. It doesn't. There are people that work out consistently that pass away early. There are people that don't work out at all and live into their 90s. You can be a fantastic spouse and still go through a divorce. You can be highly qualified for the position have a good interview, and not get the job, not get into the school, not get that particular thing. There are things in life that we just can't control. But the one thing that we can control in every situation is how we respond. How we respond to the situations that fall in our laps. And one lie, church, we must never, ever believe is that the things that happen to us are determined by chance. Now, I got COVID. Our whole family did. And from our standpoint, we were pretty cautious. We prayed almost daily that God protect us from getting COVID. And we wore our masks, but at the end of the day, I know that it's not ultimately a mask that protects me. A mask does afford some level of protection, but ultimately, I had to change my prayer after it was really difficult for me to pray, Lord, it was really easy for me to pray, let me say it this way. It was really easy for me to pray, Lord, prevent me from getting COVID. It was much harder for me to say, Lord, if you want me to get it, help me to be resolved to that. And it's interesting to me that in the media and other places, there's little to no talk about God's role in this. And how God controls events. And the irony was not lost on me with how things are portrayed in the mass media and how different COVID can be for different people. The last sermon that I preached was entitled Facing Death with Faith. I preached that sermon mentioning that people that are online should come back in, and then I get COVID and I'm out for 2 weeks with my last sermon Facing Death with Faith. And so I almost joked around with April, who bought me some shoes for Christmas, and I said, April, if I die from this, make sure you bury me in my new shoes. Now, that's not to make light of a disease that has taken the lives of many, but all that to say that there is a role for God in any and everything, and evidently, for whatever reason, he allowed our family to experience COVID, and thankfully it was fine. But I am completely okay and resolve to the fact that God plays a role in allowing things to happen, and that whatever he allows to happen can turn out for my good. And you and I have got to know that. Not just in periods of dancing, but especially in moments of mourning and fear and loss and crippling things and falling down and hospital things. You've got to know that everything that the Lord allows to your lap can be used for your good. And if you know that, then you can respond in the appropriate way at the appropriate time. But one thing, once again, I say that all to say that things in our lives are not left up to chance. Nothing in life is left up to chance. If that was true, then God would not be as powerful as he says he is. It would mean that there is something that is more powerful than God. Either randomness, And that's an option that many people try to take. And what do you do when you do that? How do you live if you believe that life is governed ultimately by randomness and your own effort? What a scary place to be. But one thing that this text in Ecclesiastes shreds to pieces is that we do not have to believe the lie that everything is determined by chance and randomness. Chapter 3 in verse 1 says that there is a time for everything and a season for every activity under the heavens, and that word for time is used for predetermined time and appointed time. You got an appointment. You celebrate things at a certain time. The Jews would celebrate the Feast of Purim at a set time every year. We celebrate birthdays and anniversaries at a set time. And you and I have got to understand that the good things that we experience are part of God appointing time, and the bad things that he allows in our lives are not random, but they also have an appointed time. God, every year, gives us causes to celebrate. God, every year, allows us to experience things that may bring us to our knees. He may allow us to experience a disease we don't want. He may allow us to experience hurts that break us down. But it is in those moments where, if we choose to respond to what God is doing appropriately, just like muscles are broken down and built back up, spiritual muscles are shaped in adversity. Ask a person that has fallen in love, ask a person that is a part of a family. Part of what makes family so wonderful, part of what makes friendship so wonderful, a best friend, part of what makes love so wonderful is the conflict you weather together. I bet you could look at any people that are married, any people that come from families that love each other, and those families have weathered conflict together. Those relationships have been built up when two people say that we are going to tackle this conflict together. Now, conflict, mind us, right? Conflict can destroy love. Conflict can deepen love. It depends on how we respond to the conflict and the bad, as well as the good. Now, you think about the text. A time to be born and a time to die. A time to plant and a time to uproot. A time to kill and a time to heal. A time to tear down and a time to build. A time to love and a time to hate. A time for war and a time for peace, and so on. And you could travel again to the hospital and see the person or the people experiencing different things on the same day, some being born and some dying. You can travel back to Texas, May 24th, 2022, in Uvalde. 19 students, two teachers shot dead by an 18-year-old. We can go through shootings at LGBTQ places and stuff all over the place. We can talk about the mailman that was shot not long ago, the mother that was shot not long ago in Milwaukee, the person that was hit by a car and dragged and died that we saw in the news and all this week. We don't have to go very far to experience unexpected circumstances that bring mourning into the lives of parents that have lost these children and these teachers. We don't even need to go to Texas to talk about loss. We can go no further than this building here, where some here have lost spouses, whether it be to COVID or something else, people that they've been with for decades, 30, 40, 50 years, people who have people in another country that are not doing well, people that have mothers and sisters in the hospital, people that have lost jobs without warning, people that have taken trips to the hospital for things, people who have had falls, they've cracked elbows, they've other things going on that maybe nobody knows about but them. All of that is present in this room. But along with the mourning, there are also people that are experiencing the exact opposite. And just like a hospital, you go to the same building and people can be experiencing two very different things. It's the same way in churches, where people can be sitting in one pew and they're mourning a loss. People in the back row can be sitting and rejoicing about a birth. Someone has lost a job here, but another person has got a promotion. Someone has received an internship. Someone has lost a spouse. Someone has acquired a spouse. They got married. They had children. Those Bowmans. Every year of the pandemic, we have one child. I'm enjoying it, but a break is all right, too. Some have lost money, but some have also received financial help. We don't have to travel far for war either, situations of war. I guess we could travel far to Ethiopia in the Tigray region, where there's civil war going on there, and then we can go to the northwest and see Russia and Ukraine, where there were bombs that were dropped as recently as yesterday. And a writer reported that there is hate, certainly probably on both sides, to what is going on. There's a time where that happens. What's especially frustrating in difficult moments. Notice I find myself continuing to talk about difficult moments because I feel like those are the moments where it's hardest to reconcile what we believe about God. For some people, it's easy to do that when God just allows us to experience seasons of prosperity and blessing and dancing. It's a little bit harder to have that same mindset when God allows us to experience situations that threaten to take our hope away, that threaten to take our joy away. But there's something we've got to keep in mind when we go through difficult moments. And that is that humans, you and I, are finite. God is infinite, meaning that we are limited. Our wisdom can go, we can think, but it can only get so far. We cannot go beyond the boundaries of our existence. And Ecclesiastes says a little later in the context, "What do workers gain from their toil?" I'm in verse 9. "I have seen the burden God has laid on the human race. He has made everything beautiful in its time. He has also set eternity in the human heart. Yet no one can fathom what God has done from beginning to end." Some people think that the author is kind of joyful about that, but it could be that he's very frustrated. God has set something in me that wants more, that craves for more. C.S. Lewis talks about this in his book, Mere Christianity. He says that creatures are not born with desires unless satisfaction for those desires exists. A baby feels hungry and there's such a thing as food. A duckling wants to swim, well, there's such a thing as water. Men and women feel sexual desire where there's such a thing as intimacy. And then he says, "If I find in myself a desire which no experience in this world can satisfy, the most probable explanation is that I was made for another world." There is something that God has put in us that makes us conclude that we cannot be satisfied with anything here. Pleasure is not going to do it. Wisdom is not going to do it because wisdom has its limits. Pleasure has its limits. We've got to reach out and center our worldview on the God that gives us the good and allows us to experience the bad. And yes, it may be frustrating, but we've got to understand that frustration does not mean that God is bad. It does not mean that God is evil. It just means that God is God and we are not. And there are some things that we just cannot understand. You know this when you have children. There are certain concepts that they just can't understand. Corrie ten Boom, in her book, The Hiding Place, which is a Holocaust book about a Christian surviving the Holocaust, she gives a helpful illustration, I think, about dealing with frustration in tough situations. Let me read it to you. She said, "Oftentimes I would use the trip home to bring up things that were troubling me." This was when she was younger. "Since anything I asked at home was promptly answered by the aunts. Once, I must have been 10 or 11, I asked my father about a poem we had read at school the winter before. One line had described, quote, a young man whose face was not shadowed by sexin, S-E-X-S-I-N, one word. I had been far too shy to ask the teacher what it meant, and Mama had blushed scarlet when I consulted her. In those days, just after the turn of the century, sex was never discussed, even at home. So the line had stuck in my head. Sex, I was pretty sure, meant whether you were a boy or a girl, and sin made my aunt very angry. But what the two together meant, I could not imagine. And so, seated next to Father in the train compartment, I suddenly asked, Father, what is sexin? He turned to look at me, as he always did when answering a question. But to my surprise, he said nothing. At last, he stood up, lifted his traveling case from the rack over our heads, and set it on the floor. Will you carry it off the train, Corey? He said. I stood up and tugged at it. It was crammed with the watches and spare parts he had purchased that morning. It's too heavy, I said. Yes, he said, and it would be a pretty poor father who would ask his little daughter to carry such a load. It's the same way, Corey, with knowledge. Some knowledge is too heavy for children. When you are older and stronger, you can bear it. For now, you must trust me to carry it for you. And I was satisfied, more than satisfied, wonderfully at peace. There were answers to this and all my hard questions. For now, I was content to leave them in my Father's keeping. And the same thing is true about difficult moments sometimes. God's thoughts are higher than our thoughts, and his ways are higher than our ways. And sometimes it is an act of faith in a moment where things are deeply troubling and deeply hurtful, and you can't understand, to know and to let them be in the Father's keeping and to just be resolved. I don't need to know all the reasons. All I need to know, God, is that you are good. And if you know that God is a Father who is good, then in the good times and in the bad times, we can hold on to hope. And in the joyful times, we can still remember to be still and know that he is God. I think that would be a great place to end, especially since that is the song that we were singing in just a moment. But let me conclude before we go into the song with this. I asked in my sermon synopsis, I asked a question, dare we hope in such a Hebel world where life is fleeting and where things seem to be unfair, where there's a time to be born and a time to die and a time to experience all these things, even some of these things we may not understand? The answer, of course, is yes to that, because this life is not all there is. The author of Ecclesiastes seems to wonder about if there's anything else after death. But progressive revelation in Scripture helps us know that the answer to that is yes, there is a life where God will set everything right. And it doesn't just start later. It starts with God entering into the brokenness. And where we could not bridge the chasm to get to God. God could have said, jump and reach me. But we can't jump and meet him. So God stoops down and he comes to us. And it's interesting that Jesus experienced almost everything in these different seasons. There was a time where he was born and held. There was a time where he was crucified. There was a time where he was killed for our sins. And the thing that we all need to realize is that when we go through situations that rob us or that threaten to rob us of our joy, situations where we suffer, one thing we can never say is that God does not know what it is to suffer. He has suffered in our place on our behalf. And that was the will of God for him to bring us into a relationship with him. When you go through suffering, I hope that you don't forget that. I hope that you know that you have a God that loves you so much that he would come and suffer to bring you into a relationship with him. I hope that you don't ever forget that. I hope that despair never swallows you up to the point where you forget that. I hope that grief never eats you up to the point where you can't remember that. Maybe there's something to share this morning about how God is giving you a season of dancing, but maybe there's a time that we need to pray and surround you because you're grieving and you need strength. But whatever it is, as we sing this song, I pray that you hold on to your hope and remember to be still and know that he is God. Would you reflect on that as we stand and sing together?